Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's L-O-N-E-S-T-A-R Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big.
All right. Welcome to the Goodish Girls, guys. My name is Dallas.
And I'm Cass.
And we are back with Brimstone. We are covering chapters 31 through 37 this week. So as normal with all of our other Brimstone episodes, this is a spoiler series. So please make sure you have read not only Quicksilver, but all the bonus chapters for Quicksilver and all of Brimstone as well. If you have not, pause here, come back and listen later. If you have, then welcome. Thank you for joining us today. We are deep diving. Each chapter will have a overall chapter recap of our own perception, and then we'll dive into some big plot points. What are we drinking today?
The classic.
A Red Bull.
Just hit it every time.
Normally we drink the same thing, but this week we're getting a little bit different. I'm going to start with some wine because it's in that time in the day. However, this is a fancy wine, okay? This is a fancy wine. I don't know the name, but what I do know is that it has a bunch of googly eyes on it because my daughter is into pranking now. And I open my fridge and every single thing in my fridge has fucking googly eyes on it. So I left it all there.
I thought you bought the bottle of wine like that. And I was like, why the fuck did you pick that one? I was so glad that you... Yeah, I'm so glad you said that because I was going to be like...
It's from the rolling hills of California, okay? The googly eyes give it an ambiance. These googly eyes watch the grapes grow on the vine.
Do they?
Yeah. The milk has googly eyes. All of my coconut waters have googly eyes. The meat that's in the fridge has googly eyes. All my wine. Wow. Every protein shake. The only thing
she
was
got you.
Diet Cokes because they wouldn't stick to it. But everything in the fridge is Googled.
It is Googled. I love it.
What the fuck?
At least they're harmless pranks.
It's so funny. Worse. She did a great job.
Yeah, it could
normally
be worse.
It's putting random objects in dad's boots. That's a really fun prank for her. So when he goes to work in the morning, puts his boots on, he never knows what he's going to find. And it's funny.
Does he dump them first, preparing? Or does he always,
I think he has to reach into them now. He knows now to, reach into the boot to, find the object of the morning.
He doesn't just put his feet in and, get stabbed by something?
I think he did the first time, and then he learned his lesson. And the best part is that she's trained her one-year-old brother to also put things in the boots. So not only are her items in the boots, he puts his shoes and toys in the boots as well. So now the boots are full. It's a team effort.
He's like, this is a basket, actually.
Yeah, I see Sissy putting Daisy's boots all the time. I'm going to go do that. Yeah,
that's so funny.
Eventually, they're going to prank together as older children, and it's going to be wild in this house. It's
probably going to get worse.
She's getting more creative.
Yeah, it won't be as cute and funny. One day, they're going to do something, and you're going to be like, this was not a prank. This was not okay.
Thankfully, I'm not in the pranks. I don't prank and I'm not involved except for the googly eyes. They put it in and I was like, I don't remember being a part of these games. So yeah, cheers. Vapor and smoke. So overall recap of this chapter, Fisher makes us all have anime heart eyes because he sings to Onyx and steals food from somewhere in the universe. Foley and Fisher finally reunite, and we cannot believe that he didn't even get a punch in the arm for literally attempting to kill Fisher's mates. And we all are side-eyeing Guru because the cat is something else.
Is he?
No, I'm not. He is. I have receipts. I have receipts. I think he is a cat. I don't think he's something else. I think he belongs somewhere else or has an origin story or is a bigger part of something else, if that makes sense.
Yes, okay.
I don't think his soul is something else. I think he is a cat. I think he is a shadow cat from somewhere.
Okay.
So, first thing, Fisher sings to Onyx, which is literally the cutest fucking thing I've ever seen in my
life. So sweet. So sweet.
Oh, my God. Literally. Heart eyes. The whole time. Corn cobs. I don't know. Whatever the K-pop Demon Hunter ladies do.
Corn cobs. Those are for abs. Eating popcorn.
I loved all of it, okay? Well, Fisher uses a small magic. He says, my illusions were real as long as they were observed. A bath could be real. clothes, but not food, which I thought was really interesting because those are still objects. It just didn't work like that. That's my answer. That's the answer we were given.
Yeah.
I had to pull that kind of magic from somewhere else, and that took concentration. I reached and grunted with the effort as I reached into my small magic into a different place entirely, and I drew a silver bowl containing half of a smoked piece of trout. Right about now, a barmaid at the Shag's Nest in Western Dow was wondering where in the all five hells the aura of smoked trout she'd just been carrying has disappeared to. What?
Okay.
The fuck? What? Why? How?
I don't know. Why didn't he get, like, Archer or somebody to bring... Onyx food.
I don't know. Because it was, I guess, easier for him to use. Well, and I think it gave us an opportunity to see into more magic that he can do.
That's fair.
Right? So, like, I see the window of opportunity.
Yeah, that's
for that.
Fair.
I just don't understand if that's going to be important for us later or not. But I think it's really fun, all of the different elements of magic that Callie was able to put into this book.
Yeah, that's fair.
Right? It's her book. She can write it how she fucking wants to. You know
That's
what
fair.
I mean?
Yeah.
And so in return, Honor gives the gift of a pine cone to Fisher from underneath Ceres's bed. How many pine cones are under that bed?
Probably a lot.
How many pine cones is he just hanging out under the bed?
Probably
a lot. Pine cone. Wild. So in our last episode, we talked about how Fisher was so different in Sylvaren. He didn't pay attention to any details. He didn't pay attention to what was around him, who was moving, what was happening, where. But this is why I think he was being off. Something was off about him. Because when he's back in Amatriarth and he's going to meet Foley, there is a... It's kind of a longer quote, but, like, it does say, like, what was happening, right? Mm-hmm. He says, the rug underfoot was threadbare at the entrance to the snug. Threadbare also along the section before the large hearth on the far wall in which a fire crackled merrily in the grate. The bald spots in there indicated... many hours during which someone had paced, lost in their thoughts. In the center of the cloistered space was a large table, on top which sat a contraption made of cogs and a log, spindled arms with shining brass balls attached at their ends. The arms were still, but over time they would move. It was an array. Orrery? O-R-R-E-R-Y. Orrery. I don't know. A beautiful one, too. Once there had been one in my father's study. As a failing, I had been fascinated by the complex workings of it. My parents had sat at the device, studying it at length. They'd shown me the planets as they were represented by the globes of inlaid silver and copper. How they danced around one another, all spinning around the much larger golden sun at its center. This array was very different from the one in my father's study. The alignment and the number of planets were different. It was beautiful, to be sure. So first of all, that is very detailed. You know, everything that's happening in that room right now and everything that has happened in that room. Why? And then second of all, why does one Orrery have a certain amount of planets versus the one you're looking at now that has a different amount of planets?
Demon gods?
I don't know. I don't have an answer for
you. I don't know.
I do have that question, though. Okay, and then, so, moving forward. To Guru. I think he is from where Styx lives. I think maybe he is a representative of Styx, which is why I think he's a suspect.
I agree.
In maybe he isn't going over there and being like, meow, 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 meow. But I do think Styx can see through his eyeballs, the little cat eyes.
Hmm.
Or something of that sort. Because here's what he says about the cat. Fisher says, it became a thing of ink and darkness again and disappeared into the long shadow I cast across the moth-eaten rug. All right, then, I muttered to myself. I felt no different. Aside from having just seen it happen with my own two eyes, I had no evidence that the cat had just merged with me somehow.
Can he do that to anybody or just that bloodline?
No one's ever mentioned it. We've seen him disappear. Right? Like, they're like, oh, she's like, the cat was there, and now the cat's gone. But never once has anyone mentioned, he's like, oh, that's weird. If I hadn't seen it with my own fucking two eyeballs, I would have no evidence that cat just literally merged with my own shadows.
Yeah.
Which is why I think that the cat is from that.
I agree. As soon as we find that out at the end, I definitely thought that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was really
But I don't know why Guru's here.
That's why I think he's kind of a spy.
Maybe.
I don't know. But we're moving on to Foley. We had talked about eyes in the previous episode as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
We talk about Bellicons, like guards, having weird pupils, weird eyes. Foley, we learned, did not always have vertical pupils. Why does no one else have these?
So here's a theory that I have. Maybe it's because he didn't swear, right, into the blood court, even though technically he's vampire. And he doesn't drink blood, right? They took his fangs, essentially, his canines.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So does that over time affect him? And maybe it, like, changed him in some way?
It's possible. They do bring up the fact that others have also not done that, right? And they got their fangs removed, like shunned vampires, but that they all pretty much die in the fields. So it right, doesn't really describe doesn't. Them all. Right, so we don't have a description
of those. Was he still alive?
Because he has been living in the library, and he's been eating rats and birds.
That's
and
true, any he's sort eating of, like, other animal blood.
He can get a hold of and draining them instead. So I like that theory. That it seemed to be that would be like a more reasonable explanation, I think.
Yeah.
So that is interesting. I want to jump back really quick to Guru. And the fact that Kingfisher calls Guru a little prince, but he only calls Onyx little one. Do you think that matters? Like what he says, he says, jumped up and came running when he noticed the bead of blood that had dropped to the ground at my feet. This is when he like cut his hand open for Foley. Mm-hmm. Yowling, he looked up at me as if asking for my permission. Of course, a strange little thing drank blood. Go ahead, little prince.
I don't know. Feel like I just it want that has to do with him being a part of, like, the shadows and everything.
Mm-hmm. I don't think that that was a mistake.
Onyx is not. Or, like, yeah.
A cute pet.
I don't think so. No.
But these are the only two animals in the story that have been written as if they understand and or can communicate with the people and or Fae of this, right? Like, you don't see him talking to Ada.
Right. And when he writes about Bill, like, in the beginning, right, and he's on Bill, he says he has, like, that connection from riding him for so long.
And getting to right? know
that
him, yes.
The pressure, the things that you normally would do with a horse when probably in battle or riding them consistently mm-hmm. throughout their life, but not in the same manner.
Right.
Yeah.
And part of me thinks it's weird. And then part of me is like, maybe I should just chalk it up to the fact that Callie might be anthropomorphizing animals.
Maybe.
Right? It is easy to do. It's easy to think of, like, your animals that you have as, like, your family members or your fur babies or whatever you want to call them. And be like when before my cat passed, like, she would argue with me all the time. I would tell her something and she would meow back and we would argue. Right? Mm-hmm. Like, I anthropomorphized her on a daily. Like, she would tell me when it was time for bed. She'd come out in the hallway at the same time and meow at me, and then we'd go to bed.
Yeah.
So, like, it is easy to do.
Mm-hmm.
Or is it something else? I don't know.
Good question.
So, when he's talking to Foley, we obviously don't get any injuries to him, which I also think is so weird that he literally attempted to assassinate his mate, and no repercussions came of it. I was like, not even a little punch in the arm, nothing, mm-hmm. little slap on the hand. Okay, that's fine. It's fine. I mean, Sarah's handled her own. She doesn't need that. But also, like, I just expected it.
Yeah. With how protective he is, yeah.
But which tells us Foley is very special to him. And
maybe
is a very
more
big,
special than Ren?
Maybe. I think because of what happened to him.
Yeah, maybe.
So also, the guys, after they're done, like, talking and figuring out, like, that Foley is able to be around them, right, without wanting to hurt them, because, like, years of training, they bring up Joshin again. Because he obviously still had the box with him. And he was like, well, I didn't say where I would release Joshin, right? I didn't say where, I didn't say when, nothing. And then the box itself isn't a demon trap, it's just a box. Because there's one scorpion in there, one part of Joshin. And Foley says, I'll keep it here for you for now. I'll watch over it until you ask for it back. But in the meantime, tell me about the demon's secret. And I was so mad that we didn't actually get... Because we know what the secret is. We were told previously, like, what the secret is, right? It's, like, about fighting this queen, this woman. Something has to happen, you know, trades, right. Like, things like that. But we don't get Foley's information on it, and I think that is on obviously that's on purpose. But I think it's on purpose because I think Foley has answers. I think Foley's like,
probably.
I think I know who this is and what he's talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So I think in book three, Foley will help us understand that secret more than anything else.
Yeah. And that's it.
Yeah. That's the end of that chapter. So chapter 32. Yeah.
Chapter 32, The Thing About Leaning. Green talks more about sex.
But not regular sex. Fire sprite sex.
Mm-hmm. Bellicon makes plastic blades. Evenlight is once again supposed to be important, and Ceres finally receives the book from the tiny paper birds.
Tiny paper birds.
What?
Hee hee, the real stars. Yes, I like that you call them plastic blades.
I saw that on TikTok, and I have ran with it. I think it is funny. I think it's so funny. They're like, it's not made of metal. It's not made of this. It's made of something you can't access. And they're like, so they're running around with like plastic knives. They're like, you can't do nothing.
Got them at Walmart in a big pack.
Yeah.
They were like, also buy one, get one
free. So funny.
Next to the wine. Yeah. That's, I love that. The plastic knives. Yes.
Yeah.
So Carrion leans in all directions. Hee hee hee. He says, that's okay. The thing about leaning is that it's very unstable. The ground could shift and you find yourself leaning in a completely different direction at any moment. I, myself, have experienced all kinds of leanings.
Of course he has.
I want a bonus chapter with Tao and Carrion.
Oh my gosh.
And they lean.
And they lean.
That's it. I eat that shit up, man.
That would be a great.
And I thought it was so interesting that Carrion was humble enough. Because Tao's like, you can come in if you want. He's like, that's a lot of ladies to like entertain in one sitting. Uh-huh. He's like, I don't know. And I was like, good for you for being humble, bro.
I think he could have done it.
I think he could have as well.
Yeah.
Maybe it was because Tao was there and he didn't want to like embarrass himself.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Carrion.
I like that bonus chapter idea.
It'd be a good
Carrion
one.
Actually enters the room. He goes back later in a different night. Mm. That's what happened. So we do learn more about the Null Blade and or the plastic blades. So it's really affecting people. It's affecting them, right? It's making temples pound. Like, it's making Ceres' temples pound when she tries to, like, read the metal at all. And even Carrion's like, I don't like this dagger. And it's touching it. Or no, this was Tao. Tao is like, I don't like this dagger. Touching it nearly put me on in the ground for good. It made me. And then someone's like, it made me want to peel out of my skin and throw myself into a burning lake of fire. It's evil. I don't. What is this? What is happening with these fucking swords? Like, I don't.
I don't know.
And then someone's like, maybe it was like a god sword. Maybe its owner is only supposed to touch it like that.
But and they have the Null Blade, a bunch of them. Like the whole army has one.
Yep, one for each soldier. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and then someone said, the Null Blade thrum in the scabbard on my thigh as I climbed. By the time I reached the library, my leg was numb from my hip to my knee and I wanted to cry. My runes ached, pain shuttling up and down my arms in waves. So even when it's not touching your skin, it's still, near its you. Power is still affecting.
Yeah. Yes.
So these it's things wild. Are serious. Like, no joke. So then we go back to the Evenlight again for the 1200th time. The Evenlight Ball, where we learn more about Madra and what she did for the Evenlight Festival. Mm-hmm. What we get is this ranting and raving about the dangers of magic and how mythical fae monsters are trying to infiltrate the city to corrupt us and steal our children. So
blah, 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 blah.
And I think that's what they want us to think. I think they want us to be like, ah, blah, 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 Madra, shut up. But we know that there are fae there, right? We know that. We know that Elroy has been working with people. We know that Carrion's grandma, like, was a big part of it. We know that they can't be the only two families who are helping. So I think Madra knows that this is happening somewhere, right? And I don't know what her end goal is, like, to scare people. Right? To keep fear, right? Fear equals control. Fear equals power. So keeping them afraid, and if they see a fae or something happens, they're not like, oh, I could trust you, you're a fae. It's like immediately goes to her so she can eradicate them.
Right.
But then again, why does she celebrate the Evenlight Festival? We know now that there's Evenlight within Zilvaren, even though there shouldn't be. So she somehow got Evenlight there. And I think that she does need to recharge it once a year, as in they do in Amitreya. With the Evenlight Ball.
Yeah, it just doesn't make sense to me still.
So many questions. But also, the Evenlight Ball is a perfect place for a dramatized skit of disembowelment.
Of course it is.
In the previous chapter, we talk about, this is kind of like side note, and we'll circle back. So in the previous chapter, Carrion and his sword come back for just a moment. And this is what I was talking about the last episode where I was like, oh, another line is said where it's like, oh, Carrion's going to get his sword. Sirius right. is like, oh, he said something about going to fetch a sword, too. Like, so nonchalantly. Mm-hmm. Where were you, Carrion? What are you doing? What are you up to?
Oh, nothing.
Just minding my own business. Yeah, right. So, into the Stargazers that we have kind of mentioned in the overall recap, right? So, the Stargazers slice Sirius to get mm-hmm. her blood to make sure she is the right one. Mm-hmm. How do they have her blood?
That is a really good point that until you wrote this out on here and I read it and I was like, wait a goddamn minute. Because if she was human, right, and she wasn't mm-hmm. Fae like Adina thought, where's the bloodline yep. that they could go off of?
She's half now. She's half Fae, half vampire.
Right.
So her blood isn't even the same.
And she has Quicksilver in it at this point.
Yes. How did they know?
That's a very good question.
They've been waiting there a fucking millennium. Adina, what tricks do you have up your sleeve?
That's a great question.
I have a question. That's my question. Yes, I don't have a theory. I just have questions. Mm-hmm. So if anyone has an idea, let me know. Because I am all ears. But somehow they got her blood. And the little pieces of the book are what the Stargazers make up. So mm-hmm. we get a couple like little tidbits. First thing, it says, in most cases, the power is too great. The alchemist will need to surrender. And it also says, painful. Historically, it was recommended that the counterbalance be used as a kind of alchemical flow, an alchemical overflow mechanism. What the fuck are they talking about? What are they talking about?
Millie's like, I fucking know.
Millie knows everything.
She's like, if only you could understand my boofs right now.
I know what alchemical overflow mechanisms are.
I'm telling you. I have no idea. And where's Foley?
Foley, hello?
Yeah, what does this mean?
Historically, it was recommended that a counterbalance be used as a kind of alchemical overflow mechanism. So what is the counterbalance? What sort of object or item is needed to balance the amount of power that these alchemists need to surrender to?
I have no idea.
This is all we get. Those are the tidbits that we get. That's all we have to go off of. So I'm hoping we get a full paragraph in book three. So if anyone has any ideas on that, I would love to hear them because I actually don't have a thought on that. I'd love to hear everybody else's thoughts.
Too complicated for my brain. That's where my brain shut off a little bit. I was like, I'm sure it'll explain it later.
Later. In another time. Another book. In a bonus chapter, maybe. So, also, side thing, is Callie, I think, made an ode to all deluxe edition books that have been coming out everywhere. And here's why I say this. Because as they're talking about the book that is, like, bound and has a blue butterfly, it says, other than that, there were no gilded edges, no fancy woven tassel. And I think she was talking about deluxe editions. Because some of them come with, like, tassel bookmarks, and they have sprayed edges, and they have foiled covers, and they have, like, all these things. Mm-hmm. And I think she was like, it's just a nice-looking book. It's simple.
Maybe.
That made me laugh. I don't know if that was a real thing. Maybe I'll ask her one day.
Maybe.
But I was like, that's funny. And then also, we get hit in the fucking soul. Because in the letter.
This is where it gets deep.
Killed me. This is a letter from Adina. And it says, for you, God's bless. Thank you for loving my boy. This is shitty. I don't like it.
That's
and
shitty.
And is Adina there? Is she watching? Where is Adina?
I don't know.
We know she's around.
Yeah.
We know she's around. Move that. Sorry. Oop. So we learned that in the book, the first part is a test, right? Adina's like, don't let Kingfisher have it. Don't give him the book, no matter what. Mm-hmm. It's really important. And we were like, okay, that's sus. Mm-hmm. And then Sirius is like, I'm going to give you this book because I love you and this is weird. So she says, find it, but do not tell him about it. I mean it. It's important. He can't know about the book. Only you. Do you understand? And she gave him the book. Good girl. So he reads it and hands it right back to her.
Thank fucking God. Because remember in earlier episodes, we talked about this, right? When she gives her this prophecy to be like, find the book, don't give it to him. And I was like, That's really sus that you're like, yeah, keep secrets like from your husband. Don't tell him.
From like, your God-bound mate.
Don't tell him.
Great idea.
No.
Yes.
But it was a test, okay? Because one, I was like, how is she going to hide this from him? This man notices everything about this girl. How? Right? Well, yeah, I guess you're right. But Saris wasn't there, okay, first off.
Not there.
But two, I was also extremely worried that she was going to give him this book. He was going to open it to read it, and it would all disappear. I was so scared that she was, like, so dead set and being like, he cannot know any of this.
He cannot.
That it was, like, the words were going to disappear or something, and then they were going to be fucked. But thank God that didn't happen. Thank God.
I didn't think that, but I can see why you did think that.
Yeah, I was so scared. Yeah. I was like, no! But at the same time, I was like, good job!
But I was like, what could happen? Give him the book.
No, I was so scared. I thought that book was going to go away.
That is a really scary thought, and I fully can get behind your thoughts on that for sure.
Yeah.
But it doesn't.
No, we're good. Right, everything's fine.
And says, this book is from you, and that is chapter 32. Chapter 33, however, called No Regrets. The chapter recap is Adina breaks our hearts. That's it. That's literally the fucking recap of the chapter. Yep. This shit fucking killed me. This is a letter to Fisher from Adina in the first page of this book. And it says, my son, I close my eyes and dream of the universe. And there are such events that stretch out before my mind like way markers upon a road. They are firm and undeniable in their existence. But there are pathways that veer from that road along the way. Side streets that might lead a player on the grand stage of fate off in another direction. There are many of these such diversions on the road that lies before you, and many that lie before your mate as well. Today, she stands at a fork in the road. I see the way before you both, and I see you tread the path together. But the bond that binds you both will be strongest if she places this book into your hands. I wish I could explain more. I wish I had lived to see you grow into the man I know you will become. But do not worry. I have witnessed it in death, and I wouldn't have changed that for anything. Your soul is shattered by the knowledge that I remained here for so long after I passed. But please know that it was necessary. And now that I have cherished every second that I have gotten to watch you from this side of the veil, I have no regrets. I love you. I am proud of you. Now give her back the book. Yeah, damn it.
Sigh.
Yeah. Fucking ruined me. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, my question is, how or why did she stay on this side of the veil? It's mentioned in previous chapters that, as far as we know, like, she didn't bind her soul to anybody. She didn't sacrifice a piece of her soul. But I think those words are interesting. I think, because it's like, as far as we know, I think she might have.
I think she might be bound to the book. Which I don't know if that's a thing that you can do to be, like, bound to an inanimate object. But I feel like her soul is in the Stargazers, possibly. And she's sitting there waiting for this to happen. I don't remember it saying if she is still there now that they have the book. Do they, like, bring that back up?
I don't think they do. Right? I don't think Everlane comes back. Mm. Like, I know she doesn't wake up, but, like, Adina doesn't come back into her body as a vessel.
No.
The book is all put together. So maybe that's a good thought, I think. I can get on board with that thought of, like, her being soul-bound to these books.
Right.
And maybe that's the only way that they know if that's really Saris.
True.
Somehow, some way.
Yeah.
She knows what Saris's blood is like.
Right.
So that's interesting. But the reason why I think that maybe she also was soul-bound to somebody is that she's like, please know it was necessary. And it says, please know that I have cherished every second that I have gotten to watch you from this side of the veil. But if she was the birds in the library in Amontreath, she hasn't really gotten to watch him do anything.
Well, if she's bound to... If her soul is bound to the birds, in my mind, it just...
In the library.
My mind, it just keeps her in this world.
Oh, like her soul can go anywhere, but the birds can go in the library. Oh, I see. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Like, until that until they perish, mm-hmm. which is when they go into the book, right. she's just there waiting. You know? I don't know.
Yeah, I like that theory.
I don't know. I like but that's how I read it.
Yeah, for sure. All right, chapter 34.
Chapter 34. Very wrong indeed. We learn more about the plastic blades. Archer yaps and then almost dies. All caps.
I'm going to tell you exactly where I was at when I listened to this chapter.
Go ahead.
Let me set the scene for you. It's December 2nd at 5 p.m. It's my fucking birthday. I'm in the car. I leave. My husband gets home from work. He's like, what do you want to do? And I was like, nothing. I just want Chinese food and I'm going to go get it myself so I can listen to my book. Mm-hmm. And my children are at home. So I get in my car. I go. I pick up Chinese food. I'm on my way home. And I have a thing where we pick up the Chinese food and I get the same order every single time. I get Mongolian beef with rice and an egg roll. And then I get a side of crab rangoons. And I eat the rangoons in my car while I drive because they're hot and they're fresh and they're the mm-hmm. best that way. And I eat 2.5 of them because it only comes with 5 and not 6, and I have to split them with my husband. So I'm eating my crab rangoons and I'm listening and I'm like, hold on. I was like, yay, Archer's here. Yay, amazing. Oh, Archer's gonna go outside. He's gonna get some flowers. They're gonna be perfect. And then I was like, and I almost choked on my crab rangoon because he was dying. And I was like driving home like, he can't die on my birthday. Should I stop listening to this chapter? I thought about pausing it until the next day because I was like, what if he dies on my birthday?
Okay, hold on. I have to see if I can find the voice note that I sent. Let me see.
I think you have mine in there somewhere.
Probably.
Where I'm like screaming into the phone.
The action. This book gives me so much anxiety. Every time I'm like, this is so fun, happy moment. You know, Ren and Kingfisher joking.
Okay, no, that's not it. But that does go with this part.
That does go with it.
And Lorith, like, bursting.
Nope. What is this one?
It's gotta be in there.
Why the fuck do all these authors give us fire sprites and then take them away from us? If Archer fucking dies, I am gonna be so upset. I know you guys have not read fucking Crescent City. This is unacceptable, and I am really, really upset. Till chapter 34, and like, also, where the fuck is Ren? Why did they hint that the feeder that Archer just killed with his blood could be possibly Ren? He's been gone for a couple days. Is this the shit that's gonna make us cry? That the lady in marketing said. Like, what is happening?
This is for chapter.
Where mine is? Actually, you know what? I don't think. Actually, maybe I didn't send one for this. I think I called you.
Yeah, you might have.
I think I called you because I think I said. One, I started crying. Two, I think I told you as soon as Archer exits the forge to go outside,
you knew.
I was like, oh, he's fucking dead, bro. I don't know what it was, but as soon as he crossed the line, he's like, I'm gonna go get flowers. I was like, the fuck you are.
R.I.P.
The
buddy.
Fuck you are. I'd like to see you come back with those flowers, actually.
Oh my god. I did not think that. I was just chilling. I was vibing.
But this is like, this is also something. I don't think I fully agree with the fact that Archer should have died. I can see both ways. I can see if he would have died, possibly how the story could have gone. And I can see how it is right this way. My question is, if he would have died, does that brimstone that is inside him go back to the collective brimstone of fire sprites? Or is that brimstone within him, like, now separated, and she could have used that to seal her runes? This is all me making up my own story, Callie Hart. But I was thinking about that, and I was like, if he would have died, right, they all need the brimstone mm-hmm. to literally live. That's what they're made up of. So could that remaining brimstone from when he dies go back into everybody else? Does that brimstone completely go away? Or could she have used that last, like, dying like moment to pull some out of him and seal mm-hmm. those runes. And then Archer could have been like the key to sealing that rune.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I don't know.
It doesn't tell us.
These are thoughts.
We definitely don't have an answer to that. Those are nice thoughts, though. I like to think that the collective, the Pyrie of fire sprites could take his brimstone and absorb it, right? Because that's the way that they procreate, is they all give a piece of themselves. And then mm-hmm. the way that they heal each other, they all give a piece of themselves. So I would think that they could take back a piece of themselves, a piece of Archer, and which could go to each of the fire sprites to keep. Because there's no need to waste that brimstone, because it's the only brimstone that they have.
Right.
I don't know what the process is to seal the brimstone. I don't know what it is. Mm-hmm. There's no way she could jump into the brimstone, right? Like, she could jump in and become one with the Quicksilver. So I think we're going to find some sort of way that she has to connect with the brimstone. Mm-hmm. In my mind, where we ended in the book, there are dragons. We know the dragons breathe fire and brimstone.
Yeah.
I think that possibly there will be
she's going to get a dragon.
She may get a dragon. I don't know. But the dragon, I think, will breathe brimstone in her direction. I think she has to be like, step! With her brimstone runes, and then do the fucking whatever that guy's name is.
Doctor Strange
with the brimstone, and then it'll be a shield for the brimstone and the dragon. The dragons will be like, what the fuck? So I don't know.
I think it could have been a more heartfelt moment if Archer would have sealed her runes, but it's fine.
Yes.
But I also
hated that forever, though.
See, I personally, though, like, I don't hate that he didn't die. There are other parts in the book later on where I'm like, come on, this probably could have happened, you know, and it would have been okay.
Yeah, I don't know. I have a hard time with people dying, so, in my book, so I'm like, it's cool, I'm good.
I grew up with my dad as a funeral director, so death is pretty normal for me. I tend to grieve a lot easier than most people.
Yeah, I'm still grieving Crescent City, so I do not do it.
For your sake, I'm happy that she didn't kill the fire sprite.
Bro, I would have crashed out. I would have sent a strongly worded email to somebody.
To Callie Hart herself.
Hello, Callie.
Like, you were my favorite author, and these are my favorite books, but not anymore. You've broken my trust.
They're still my favorite. I don't know, I've just been like... Can you please pay for my therapy? Here's actually my invoice.
Oh my gosh.
I hate it. So.
Mm-hmm.
We are here and we learn that Adina is named Adina of the Seven Towers, which mm-hmm. goes back to my original thoughts previously that why does Danya not have a surname? So we don't have an answer for that. I have questions, but I do want to know it's in this chapter that we learn that Adina is from Adina of the Seven Towers. She has a surname. Mm-hmm. But we learn more about the Null Blade and or the Plastic Blade again. So it says, trying to get a read on the Null Blade made me feel like I was falling headfirst down a dark hole every time I turned my mind toward it. The sensation was unsettling, to say the least, and left me feeling unbalanced and nauseous. She's like, I'm barely able to affect all my magic. Fisher can't affect it at all.
So why is she able to possibly, minuscule affect mm-hmm. it, but Fisher can't touch that thing? Which is very weird to me.
It is super weird. And I think the only explanation that I have is because it's a blade that was specifically designed with alchemists in mind.
Right. So you would think that Fisher could possibly kind of touch it in some way, and the alchemist mm-hmm. couldn't.
Right.
But it's opposite. Mm-hmm. I'm a little sus on that.
I am also a little sus on it. It's very weird. So Archer then steps in with some wisdom before he crashes out. And he tells Carrion how important he is. Right? Aww. He talks about, like, Rurik and Amelia Dianthus and, like, how they cared about the small folk. And they were, like, one of the best heirs. And they had their mistakes, yes, but, like... Like, they did wonderful things. And he says, they always put their people first. I know in my heart that you will do the same, Master Swift. After all, it's in your blood.
He also...
That was so sweet.
He also says that, like, people all over their world dream that one day the Dianthus heir will return and the cruelty they suffer at present will come to an end. So it's almost like a... What is that called? My mom brain is kicking in.
What is what? Can you describe it?
Like
smashing the patriarchy? Like,
No. Like, this is going to happen in the future. We all must wait for this moment.
Oh, like a prophecy.
Yes, thank you. Dear Lord, my brain could not think of that at all. But, like, it's like a prophecy that all of them believe in. Like, oh, he's going to return, and then all of our suffering is going to go away. Wow, is he Jesus?
Is Archer Jesus?
No, Archer.
I was like, girl, your theories are really good in this episode, but, like, that's a little wild.
It was a joke, first off. That Carrion is Jesus. That he's going to come back and take away our suffering. But then you were like, it's Archer. I need a sticker now that just says Archer on a cross.
Yeah.
Archer is Jesus.
Archer.
No.
Our Savior.
Carrion.
Our Lord and Savior, Archer.
Oh my God.
That's maybe, so crazy. Maybe it's a prophecy. Maybe it's just hope from the people that have to live together to survive ruling of Bellicon.
Yeah. Is that not what religion is? Hope?
You know, I don't know. I'm not religious.
You're like, no comment. No
I
comment.
Don't know. That's a good question. Archer, I believe in him.
Carrion, I believe in him.
Carrion for president, 2026. So, during this time that Archer is, like, gifting us with this knowledge about Carrion and how important he is, he says something about Adina that did not sit quite right with me. He says, he's, like, talking about, like, how wonderful she was and her favorite flowers, blah, blah, blah. It says, when she moved, it was though her feet never even touched the ground. And yes, that could be an ode to how, like, graceful she was. Or, how long were her dresses? Was she floating? Is she also defying gravity? Not like Galinda. Like the Hazrax. I don't know. Maybe there's a relation there.
I picture her as. What? Have you ever seen the Tinkerbell movies?
It's been a long time.
Like the ones by Disney?
Baby.
She says hi. Yeah, look what I got.
A giant Furby. That is way less creepy than the Furby I grew up with.
She says it looks less creepy than the Furby she grew up. I know they're cute these days.
Yeah.
The only way to turn it off, though, is to turn it upside down and hold it there.
Or lay it back. Like this.
Oh, lay it on its back so it sleeps. All right, bye, baby. Love you. So I heard the door and I was like, hello?
You're good.
I know.
What were we talking about?
You were talking about how she reminds you of somebody.
Yes, the Tinkerbell movies that are animated from Disney. She reminds me of, I think her name's Queen Clarion or something like that. Like the queen of the fairies. And she floats. I mean, I guess she doesn't float. She's a fairy. But you never see her legs because her dress is like made of pixie dust. Long. Yeah, that's what every time they talk about Lady Adina, I just picture her in my brain without the fairy wings.
That's funny. Yeah, she like floats around gracefully. I mean, I just thought it was an interesting comment. Like, and again, I know it's an ode to her gracefulness, but like, Archer has seen a lot of things. I don't know.
Right.
I think we're supposed to maybe read it as that, but also we could read it as something else. And he also says, some seers become distant as their gifts grow. They know too much, they see too much, but not Lady Adina. She remained exactly who she had always been, even when that monster sent for her and she had to go. And then it says, you know, she used to love coming to this forge too. She knew nothing about metalwork or the workings of a forge, but she would come and sit in that chair, yes, that one, the one next to yours, and she would say that she was visiting with a friend. Onyx? Hello? Who else waited in that fucking forge? And then, Callie tries to distract us by telling us that Archer has 3 fingers and a thumb. Good fucking try. Good try. See you. No. She was with Onyx in that forge. And she's probably like, hello, Onyx, my name is Adina, and I need you to befriend this lovely lady named Ceres. Because I'm an oracle, and I see everything, and she's going to need you in her life. So you wait right here.
Is she bound to Onyx?
Can you soul bind to an animal?
Honestly, at this point, I think Callie can do whatever the fuck she wants.
Okay, let's say, hypothetically, she is soul bound to Onyx, and that's why her soul is still here. Mm-hmm. And the Stargazers are still here, even though, like, when Onyx died, did that set Adina free?
Because
technically he did die, and then Ceres brought him back.
Right. I don't know.
Yeah, good
try, Callie. We'll see if she returns.
My ass like that. She was like, oh yeah, Archer has three fingers and a thumb. And I was like, hold on, go back. No, we're going back.
And then she's like, Archer dies.
So also, it's noted that the fire sprites are dying out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's from Carrion, and he heard that from a water sprite. And then the subject has changed again. And I think that Ceres will have to use her brimstone rune to save the fire sprites.
Yeah, I can see that happening. I don't know in what way, but I can see it happening.
I don't know what way either. I just think it's a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then when Archer is attacked, Ceres uses a null blade instead of her regular blades, and it absorbs it as well.
This is where I was like, you dumb fucking bitch.
She didn't mean to. She was like, oh shit, wrong blade.
Are you sure? Because I feel like she was like, nothing else has worked. Let me throw this one. Maybe the null blade, since it affects everything, will work. And then now you just gave the feeder that power.
And then it was interesting because when the feeder was melted by the brimstone, the only thing left was the null blade.
Right.
So did the null blade not be, was it not touched by any brimstone? Or was it touched and it just literally didn't affect it?
I would say that.
I don't know.
In my mind, I read it as, nothing can touch this thing.
Yeah, it's interesting. And then also, going over back to Carrion, we get a little hint of Carrion's magic, and we didn't even realize it. Right? We obviously get to the chapter of the future about his plans and things like that, where it's, really pointed out, but this says, Carrion hit the corner of the wall of the courtyard, a winded guh coming out of him as he tried to right himself. Behind him, the vines choking the crumbling brickwork suddenly bloomed, 1,000 tiny white flowers exploding, open and wilting right before my eyes. Dried petals rained down on the smuggler, landing in his hair as he shoved away from the wall. I think that was his plant magic.
Oh, that for sure was part of his magic.
We all read over that so fast.
I didn't catch that at all. I'm not going to lie to you. I was way too worried about Archer.
Yeah, I think we all were.
Yeah.
And then here's another reason that I think that Carrion and Daniel are training and not fucking. If it's going to spring, Ceres, Carrion called. Watch out, I'll clip it. And then Ceres tells him to stay back. She's like, stay back. But he was confident and ready.
Mm-hmm.
As if he had been training and working on his confidence in battle.
That's true.
I can see that. For sure. And then there, you had mentioned the theory of Styx being a demon god, and here's where I kind of get on that train. It says, when the brimstone is leaking out of Archer, Ceres mentions that it smells awful, like the very vapors of hell itself. And then where do you find most of the brimstone besides the fire sprites? With the dragons, through the icky portal, basically to hell.
Mm-hmm.
So I see that a little bit. A little tiny, eensy-weensy bit.
Mm-hmm.
So when the super feeder is dead, I go back to the null blade, is that everything was desecrated except for that. So did the brimstone not touch it, or did it touch it and it just didn't affect it?
I don't know. I don't know.
I wish you would tell us.
I don't know. I wish you would tell us a lot of things. But
I need to offer to sign my 12 NDAs. I'll sign 12 NDAs if you just tell me what happened. Answer these questions, please. So, that's chapter 34. Chapter 35, Brimstone. Hello, Brimstone. We have been waiting for you. This element finally becomes an important piece of the Super Feeder puzzle, and we get some serious Daddy Fisher lore, where we learn that he lost a fucking toe to a satyr troll basilisk?
Question mark?
So, Brimstone obviously becomes important. We knew it would be important here. It finally is. We have some stuff.
Did we know? Because I didn't.
It's the title of the book. So I thought we did, but I think only one of us
did. No, this is also where I called you, and I was like, tell me why my fucking dumbass just realized that the name of the book is going to be important. I was like, Brimstone. And then they're like, this is what you need to kill these things. And I was like, no way.
I love that for you. And no, I was not going to call you out on this show. I'm glad you did.
But I was going, you literally were like, I wish you would have sent that in a voice note so that I could have played it on the show for everyone to know. Yeah. Anyways.
That was really, it did kill me when you said that. I didn't realize that we're not on the same wavelength.
It's fine. I'm probably the only person that didn't know that Brimstone is going to be important.
So I, again, think that Ceres is going to heal the fire sprites with her Brimstone Rune.
She's going to do what now?
Everything's great. I think Ceres is going to heal the fire sprites with her fucking Brimstone Rune.
How is she going to seal the rune, though? We're back to this conversation. How's she going to do this?
I think she's going to have to work out with the dragon.
I can see that more and more. Only because
that's where she's my at right
theory is probably not going to happen.
Or maybe that there'll be a lot of brimstone that's like poured on the ground and she has to walk through it to like get somewhere else. And then she's going to have to like become one with the brimstone.
Yeah, maybe.
Yep. I don't know.
Is brimstone... What form is brimstone?
What do you
mean? Is it a gas? Is it a liquid?
No, it's sulfur.
So that's a gas.
When I think of it, like when it talks about like the dragons like dumping it, right, in the in the bonus chapters, it's like Omnom Shikrai was pouring brimstone. I imagine it as like molten lava. Like orange and like black and like liquidy but chunky.
A bright yellow non-metallic chemical element. Often occurs as crystals near volcanoes. Okay, yeah.
But if it's like a liquid, right? If it's hot.
Mm-hmm.
Like lava.
Okay, see, that's what I was originally thinking. But then the more I thought about it, I was like, usually you talk about like the sulfur odor. You know, when you smell like sulfur and it smells bad. My brain was just like, so it's a gas. It's not. I'm dumb. Anyways.
You're not dumb. Don't talk about my friend like that. Don't talk about my friend like that.
You're gone. Dallas just held me at gunpoint.
It's the googly eye wine. So, Ishabella is back, and we should have seen this as a red flag for her fucking stunt with Malcolm, honestly. Because what they say is it says, she returned to us now a prioress, dressed in accordance with her family's arcane line. In the span of a few days, she had been away. She had undergone the most intense trial she was ever likely to face in her lifetime. And that's all it gives us. Maybe we all should not have seen that as a red flag. But, like, reading back on it, I'm like, I see. You did something wild. She did something wild, and we should have seen it.
See, I thought maybe it was, like, time for her to do that. I just assumed all witches have to do that at some point, and she must do this trial. And she was just at that point in her lifetime. I feel like the way she presented it made you think that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then we immediately get off of that topic pretty much and enter into this Fisher parent lore, okay? I went wild with this fucking story.
She sure did.
So, only 3 pages is fine.
Okay.
What's it
called? Go ahead.
Okay, so this is where we learn that Fisher was with his mom and dad at some point in the past, right? He said mother and father had met in those forests. They courted each other out there. They had their snow-clad vows and the stories he had heard about them in their youth. Two very serious people made utter fools by love. And he says, my father lost a toe out there. And he's like, you see that shadowy spot where the snow like hasn't settled? And he's like, the Graven lives there. Half satyr, half troll with a little bit of basilisk thrown in for good measure. Which is fucking wild.
Sounds terrible.
I would be a basilisk.
Monster? What? What do you mean?
You've never read Zodiac Academy. Get out of here.
No, anyways, I haven't.
Shift something else and be like a different one for a small period of time, I would be a basilisk.
Okay.
They can go into people's minds and do all sorts of crazy shit. Just saying. I wouldn't mind it. So, it says it makes tinctures and salves and the like. A long time ago, people used to trade with the Graven for potions and spells they believe would end hexes, hail ailments, or make people fall in love with them. My father had his own magic, but he was like me. He commanded shadows and not much of anything else. Which, that
red flag.
Yes. How is your dad a god and all he commands are shadows and nothing else?
Because he's the god of shadows.
But how can you be... Yes?
The other gods don't... It's not like the god of chaos is like, here, I also wield shadows. That's his. Yeah,
he came in as shadows, element. Not much of anything else.
Yeah, that's it.
So he says, when he met my mother, he was relying on charm alone to woo her, and he didn't have much faith in his own capabilities in that department. So one day, he decided to visit the Graven. For a love potion, yes. And the Graven said to him, I'll make you a deal. I'll give you my strongest, most effective love potion, a potion so potent that the object of your heart's desire will be powerless against your advances. She will be yours for all of time if she drinks this potion that I will make for you. We'll give you this potion, and you will live out your days with a wife and a family, and you will be blissfully happy. You will be able to create powerful wards, and you will be a role model to your people and all who follow and support you. Hmm. Your right foot. I want your whole right foot, is basically what he wants. Because he's like, I want your toe. Or no, he was like, I want your right. Sorry, I got it backwards. Edit. Unless I edit this out. So I'm so stupid. Edit. So he's like, I want your right foot, your whole right foot. And obviously he was like, no. So the Graven said, fine, you won't be parted with your right foot. So how about this? When I stand in the sun, I cast no shadow. It makes others around me nervous. They sense that I am different. Then they run from me. Give me your shadows and I will give you my very best love potion.
No.
He says, my shadows were his greatest strength. My father's shadows were his greatest strength. Of course he said no. So, okay, so my final offer. You give me just one of your shadows, one that you deem fitting to someone like me, and we'll call it even. So my father thought about this, and having decided that one single shadow was a seed of magic he was willing and able to part with, he agreed. The Graven mixed up some stinking concoction and passed it off to my father, and in return, my father handed over the Graven's new shadow. The deal was done. The Graven walked with my father to the door of his cottage and stepped outside to admire his new shadow, but it was midday and the sun was high overhead. And he says, so the Graven cast no shadow? And the Graven took up a synth and went after my father. It called him a liar and a cheat and didn't notice, as it chased him through the forest, that the angle of the sun had changed and the shadow of a majestic ox was now stitched into the satyr's hooves. Wild. And he says, my mother loved my father because of who he was. It turned out his charm was enough in the end. And she's like, they told you all these stories? And he says, no, Archer did. Nearly all the stories I know of my father have come from him. And that, I think, is some fucking lore all on its own.
Yeah.
Archer knows way more than we are giving him credit for.
Archer is also made of brimstone. And who has other things with brimstone?
Styx, the god of shadows.
Mm-hmm.
Wild. I think Archer knows all the fucking secrets. Which is another reason why I don't think he's a god. Because then we would never know.
For sure.
Who are you, Archer? He's actually a super spy for the FBI.
Maybe.
Okay. So when Ceres is asking Fisher, like, what he would do for her, right? Mm-hmm. And he says, I will become your shadow. Everything is about shadows, and it's so stressful because I don't have any answers.
Yeah.
I think this was a really big ode to how in love his parents were.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I think it says a little bit about his dad and the lack of confidence within himself. And obviously the shadows are, again, a huge part of it. So, and then he ends the chapter with, you should know, Ceres, I am my father's son. My strength has always been my shadows. Bro.
Okay.
Do you think Archer knows that he's, like, Archer would know, right? That he's, like, a demigod or god or whatever.
Oh, does, for sure.
Like, does Archer know the real story about what happened in Zilvaren?
I think he does. But is he going to tell that? Probably not.
I don't know. I think Archer has some truth to tell us in the future.
I think Archer knows all. From both points of view. From Adina's and from Styx.
Yep.
I think he's very
important. I would agree.
Yeah.
What do you know, Archer?
Okay, I have a theory.
Mm-hmm.
You might have seen it. I don't know. It's a theory from TikTok, okay? So I kind of thought of this just a teensy bit. But then I saw it on TikTok and I was like, I think this is a big possibility and they might be right. At the end, right, they are going there for a trade. Mm-hmm. A lot of people assumed that, like, the trade could have been her trading off her small magic to bring Onyx back. There's also another portion where people thought the trade had already happened. Just in general, they're like, the trade has already happened. But then at the end, right, he says, mm-hmm. I want my father. I'm here to make a trade. The theory is the trade is going to be Fisher giving himself for something to do with Ceres, or at least a piece of himself, is going to be traded or possibly put within her.
Can you give me, like, an example? Did anyone say, like, what they meant?
I think the trade is going to have to be Fisher giving a piece of himself. I don't think he would give his full shadow, right? But he said, I will become your shadow. Does he give his shadows to Ceres?
How does that help Six, though?
I don't think it's going to help Six, because it doesn't say the trade has to be.
I mean, a trade is like, you get one thing, I get another thing, right? So, like, right. What does Six get in return? Does he get King Fisher?
So, the only thing that I feel sure about is that Fisher is going to give himself in this trade. In some way. In some form. I think he's going to give up himself for this trade to happen.
His shadows are his everything.
That is the only part that I'm, like, super solid on. Because at the end, there was a few things, like, a few quotes. And I'm sure it's, like, along the way when we talk about them in the books, yeah. I'll be like, this is another reason why I think that he's going to give himself for this trade to happen. I am set that the trade is King Fisher for something.
Yes, I am fairly set as of this moment. I might change my mind, but as of right now, I'm set on the fact that he will give his shadows up. I think shadows were mentioned so many times, and that they are his greatest strength and his greatest power, and they are part of him, and they are also his father's greatest strength.
Mm-hmm.
So what if in the journey to Zelvarin, let's say Six was the one who actually went to Zelvarin as Finrin, or whatever, like, lost some of his shadows and needs more?
Maybe.
I'm literally guessing. I have no receipts to back that up. I just feel it in my soul.
Yeah.
That's wild.
That's chapter 35.
Chapter 36.
Chapter 36. Would that I could. Hayden wakes up, says some shitty things, and then makes us all wish that he was back asleep. But guess who doesn't wake up? Everlane. Adina tells us a story in her book, and has anybody seen Ren?
Nobody has seen Ren.
That's the chapter.
Yeah, so Hayden is awake and still a complete asshole.
Ugh.
He does get a fucking punch in the mouth, and I was like, yes, finally. Thank you.
Yeah, I hate Hayden with a passion, so much so that I would actually trade Everlane waking up for dealing with anything to do with Hayden. He is useless. He cries and whines all the fucking time. He is annoying, and he gives opinions at, like, the wrong time, and that are completely incorrect. He just, like, says shit. He just talks out of his ass 24/7.
Yeah.
And so, Hayden, Fane, you can meet me outside.
I have a thought, and you're not gonna like it. I just wanna, and I don't, okay, I don't disagree with you. I think all of these things. I also, as usual, like to be devil's advocate. I would like us to put ourselves in Hayden's shoes for just a second.
No.
Just a moment. You hear me out. Linda.
I don't want to hear you out. I'm tired of hearing you out. I'm tired of this.
That's too damn bad.
I heard you out about Nesta. I heard you out about whoever the fuck else. I'm not Nadra, hearing you I out about you this. All of that. I'm done.
I just feel like
you used all your hear me out tokens.
No, I didn't. I still have some. I still have one.
All right, go ahead.
Okay, I feel like when Ceres was brought to Zelvarin, she, like, slowly saw all these things, and she had someone to describe them for her. She saw snow for the first time, and they were like, ah, yes, that's snow. She saw the moon for the first time, darkness for the first time. They were like, ah, that's the moon, that's the dark, these are stars. Like, this is, you know what I mean? Did anyone ever stop and explain this to Hayden? Yes, dude's an asshole. Yes, I don't disagree. But, like, did anyone take a moment and be like, hello, you are now in a new realm? Like, even when Ceres first got there, Everlane was like, there are fae, and these are their teeth, and you can't ask about them, but here they are. And, like, be careful who you trust and, like, all of these things, right? Like, she was guided a good chunk of the way. But Hayden literally just woke up and was, like, left to his own devices in Kalish. Did anyone take a moment and be like, you can drink this water and you can have as much of it as you want. You can eat this food. And, like, here are all these things that you need to know about. I just feel like that must have been really stressful.
But
I'm not saying it changes his actions.
But the stuff that he's talking about and throwing a fit about
has nothing to do with it. Correct.
Right. It's it's about how his sister acted in the past. It's about the things that Madra said about her while she was gone.
I'm not disagreeing. That's what I'm saying.
Why does any of that matter? After all those years of her doing every fucking thing for you and never making you do a goddamn thing in your life.
I know.
You suddenly believe Madra after some cartoons came out about your sister.
But I also think it's so weird that he, again, knew where the building was within all the shadows. I think bro's a little different. What if he's not really her brother?
I just thought of something mean to say, but I'm not going to say it.
I just want to be an advocate for a moment. Just be like, that must have really fucking sucked.
I hear you, but the shit that he's saying and pulling has nothing to do with any of that.
Correct. I just wanted
But I mean, like, if he was coming in and saying that, like, y'all just left me in that room and nobody told me what this stuff is and I don't understand my life. Right. That would be different. But he's not. He's like, you're a shitty ass sister. And you, did all these bad things. And you're with a fey man? Sir, what? What do you know? You know nothing.
Mm-hmm. Know nothing.
Man-child.
Yes, I don't disagree.
Anyways.
Okay, moving on. Moving on. Thank you for listening. Use my token. How many tokens do I have left?
None, actually. That was your last one. You didn't use them wisely.
I think I did.
I'm just kidding.
I feel like I use them well. Okay, so here's another question I have for you.
Yeah.
So it says, I actually did want you to tell me not to worry, I admitted. Can you rephrase all of that for me, please? Kingfisher's eyes danced with amusement as he bent down to kiss me. Would that I could, Osha. Would that I could. You are a Star Wars girly. Yes.
Vaguely, yeah.
We know that Callie Hart is also Star Wars girly. Mm-hmm. Was this a Yoda sentence? Was this an ode to Yoda? Is that how Yoda talks? How does Yoda speak?
No, yes. He speaks in, like, I don't want to say, like, riddles. Sometimes they're riddles. But yes, in that way, yeah. It does sound very Yoda-ish to me.
Sound a Yoda-y, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it does.
Would that I could, Osha. Because I was like, hold on, that doesn't make any sense. And then I was like, she likes Star Wars. This is Yoda.
Yeah, it does.
Not baby like Yoda. Adult Yoda.
Not Grogu. No, that's not his name. His name is Grogu. And no, that's not Grogu.
So, until I do.
Yes.
Okay, you can't make a Yoda that's smaller than the original Yoda and then try to give him a name other than Baby Yoda.
Yoda is a... Never mind.
Okay. Yoda's a baby? Is that what you were going to say?
No, Yoda is like one... Yoda's his name. No.
Oh, it's not his species? No, I guess it would be his name. That's fair.
That's his name.
That's fair.
But yes, all right. They're like the same species, but like it's not... Grogu is not baby Yoda. Because Yoda is his own person.
All right, fair. Whatever. I like baby Yoda better.
That's fine.
I like Jesus better when he was a baby.
Okay.
From Talladega Nights.
I don't know what that Jesus. Is.
What? Oh my god, are you serious?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh my god. Dear baby Jesus.
We're like, just talking.
Jesus grew up, right? Well, I like Jesus better when he was a baby.
We're just talking about Jesus a lot this episode for two people that aren't really into religion.
Please promise me you made me watch Princess Bride. Will you please watch Talladega Nights for me?
I made you watch what?
No, would you make me watch... I bought a book. Would you make me watch something? Would you make me watch a movie with a lady, Keira Knightley?
Pride and Prejudice.
There it is.
And I was and you didn't laugh. Happening? You didn't laugh at half of it. You didn't...
No.
No. You didn't yearn.
I did buy a special edition book of it, though, as a trophy for watching the movie. It's very cute.
You didn't respect it like you should have.
I'm sorry. I didn't understand. I was like, what's happening? Okay, but you will watch Talladega Nights and you will love it.
Okay, but you're going to have to like spell that out for me because I still don't know what you're saying. I thought you were saying like Talladega Nights or something. And I was like, what the fuck?
Not Talladega. Not Tau. Talladega okay. Nights. So okay. good. All right. Back. Goddamn.
Anyways. Madra.
So, Madra is painting Ceres in a very bad light. And is this to put her in danger for if she comes uh-huh. back? Or, like, why specifically, right? Like, that's my guess. It's like, she's painting you as a martyr, right? Mm-hmm. To, like, to her cause. So if she ever does come back, not only is the guard going to be after her, but all of the people of Zilvarin and the third will also be after her for treating, right. like, betraying them, right? That's, yeah. That's my thought. Are we all on the page for that?
Yeah.
Okay.
I agree.
During this chapter, Ceres is rune for Brimstone randomly lights on fire. And she's not even doing anything. She's literally just arguing with her brother. Why in this moment did it decide to light up? Why are you laughing?
Because I wrote, the Brimstone says burn.
Do you hear what I said? Stand there and look stupid? No, I said burn it.
Catch him on fire. Take him away. Take him away.
This boy is on fire.
Gosh.
Hatred is on fire. Wow. Yes.
Yeah.
The rune for Brimstone. Light it up. I don't know why. I don't have an answer. And I thought it was weird, and I thought it was weird timing. So.
Yeah.
Then we transfer back to more fucking Adina lore. And it's another letter, this time to Ceres, from the book. So, dear child, I know you might not be feeling very trusted in me right now. I misled you with my request to keep this book a secret from my son, and I apologize for any ill feelings that may have caused. I am not a woman given to participating in cruel games, and it brings me no pleasure to trick you. I can only hope that you will forgive me for the subterfuge and one day understand why it had to be done. I am afraid with that trickery still fresh in your memory that I must ask you for a solemn promise. I am breaking all the laws of the universe with this gambit, but for it to work, you cannot skip ahead in this book. You will read things that will prevent you from facing the challenges that are in front of you for fear of the ones ahead, to the ruin of us all. I implore you, please, do not do it. Each entry in this book has been written in service of a specific moment to come. For any of this to bear fruit, the dominoes must fall in order. With that said, I must acknowledge that there are many ways to approach what comes next, and nearly all of them will kill you. Your second rune has awoken by now, and you must know that Brimstone is not a plentiful source in Yvelia, as it once was. Historically, alchemists shied away from the second bow of the Tria Prima, which you have Quicksilver, Brimstone, and Salt of the Tria Prima. Not only because it was too powerful and difficult to wield, but because its only purpose seemed to be linked with the death and destruction. Even knowing you must conquer this rune, it pains me to advise that you must do so, as sealing this magic to your soul will come at great cost. You will have to unlock a door within yourself that will be hard to close thereafter. I will not, cannot lie to you. You will change if you choose to walk down this path. But with the Brimstone rune sealed to you, there is a chance you'll be able to use it to help save Yvelia, underline that, from the veil I see descending upon it. If you decide to reject this rune, there are still other courses of action that can be taken to fend off the darkness, but the odds of those plans working are slight in comparison. In fairness to you, I will first explain how you can reject your Brimstone rune. And then it says, you will read things that will prevent you from facing the challenges in front of you for fear of the ones ahead, to the ruin of us all. Concerning the even light ball, turn this page before leaving your chambers. An appointment awaits. Goddamn.
Is a lot.
Huge letter. So, you need to seal your rune, the Brimstone rune, mm-hmm. which is now awakened, which she knew would awaken because she knew that the argument between her and her brother would happen, I'm sure, right? She saw all the things. She's like, you can say no. Like, I guess you have a choice, but if you make that choice, it will suck for everyone because it probably won't work.
Right.
So I like to think that Adina saw them going through the icky portal and through to the other side and meeting with the dragons and asking for sticks.
Probably. I'm assuming that she knows everything that's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Another thing that is said in this book is it says the alchemists were often corrupted by their powers. The fates were ruled by their strength of will, but also by the heritage of their blood. If I was born an alchemist, then I definitely had a fae relative somewhere in my ancestry. My God. Fucking ancestry. I think I'm having a stroke. You're fine. They're googly eyes. They're googling.
Ancestry.
Ancestry.
There you go.
A zealot.
Shut up. It's a zealot is what I said, first off. Get it right. It's not my fault it's spelled that way, okay?
That you're fair, I guess. So, yes, ancestry. So, this is where I wonder who in Ceres's life might have been a fey alchemist. We know that her fates were changed by the gods, and she was meant to be born in Yvelia as a fey. Right. So, did she have heritage on that side, or are there heritage in Zilvarin that she is related to? Because we know that there are alchemists within Zilvarin.
Or there was at one point.
Right. I like the idea that her dad, A, may not be dead, and B, is actually an alchemist. Or was an alchemist.
This is like a theory that I support. I can get behind it. It makes sense.
We know how he died, supposedly, right? Like, he was crushed by, like, a building of sand or all the things, right? But, like, did he actually die?
I've got a baby on the pod.
It's a baby.
We can continue. What are your thoughts?
Yes. Those are good thoughts. I also agree with that theory. I was thinking the same thing.
Keep talking.
He has much to say.
Tell Dallas about your day.
Tell me. Yeah, I know what happened. Oh my god. And then they did that to you? They didn't feed you? Oh my gosh. You start for 1 hour? I know. Should I eat my own hand to survive?
Carl. Literally
starving. Carl. Where are his hands? So, part of the, like, Bellicon Madra backstory comes into play once again. We talked about this in our previous episode, but what it says is it says the so intertwined with it that they merged with it all together to become silver-eyed heralds of the gods. And this is the direction I think Ceres is going, because when she binds to her Quicksilver rune, it literally is within her veins. It's literally becoming a part of her. It doesn't say anything about her eyes yet. But I truly think that this is, like, a direction that she's going. It says, these were the alchemists who had spurred Bellicon and his ilk to murder the Alchemarian line and eradicate them from this realm and all others, because they had become powerful beyond all measure and threatened the grasp of the Truum Veritas power. And if you do not remember what the Truum Veritas is, it's the three, right? It's Bellicon, Madra, and Malcolm. I don't know if we should do wine during these episodes anymore. I feel like
I would probably be way worse than you if I was drinking wine this
episode. Brad Paisley's. One glass of wine and she's feeling kind of tipsy. Wow. Yes. So
yeah.
I get why they attempted to eradicate, right? Because lack of power is fear.
Right.
So I can see that. I don't know if it was necessarily a bad thing that was happening to them. Like, these alchemists that were, like, becoming more powerful. I guess we don't have a ton of information on, like, what their actions were after they had become, like, silver-eyed heralds of the gods. But my theory is that by book three, Ceres' eyes will be silver. And she will become a herald of the gods.
That's a good theory. That's what I think.
Also,
like I mentioned earlier, like, her blood... Mm-hmm. turning. I'm a little sus at that coursing through her veins now.
Yep. Yeah, for sure. And then also Ren is missing still. Like, no one has seen Ren.
Yeah. At this point, I feel like I'm the only person who cares about Ren.
Why?
Because, like, in the book, when you're reading it, they're just like, Ren's still missing. Anybody heard from Ren? No. All right. And then they just keep going.
The land and is I'm huge. Like, they can't just, like, go phone the land.
I am the only person who cares about Ren.
It's okay. They have Ishabal scribing to find him.
I was worried for her, but she's not finding him.
I know.
I thought he was dead.
I think Fisher would know in his heart if he was dead. And since it didn't say, I thought the feeder was him, the icky feeder, the super feeder.
Yeah.
When it was like, that looks a lot like Ren. I was like, But then it didn't go on it, and I was like, not Ren.
Right, right.
Yeah. Not Ren. So that is chapter 36. Chapter 37... chapter recap is we get more mommy and daddy Fisher lore, and if I don't get real answers soon, I'm gonna fucking crash out. The end. That is the recap. So plot point here is that Fisher knew his mother was with him the whole time, and he just didn't know how to accept it.
That's a little sus to me. How did he really? Know? How did he know? Feel it. Okay, but then
it says
he just didn't tell nobody.
He didn't tell nobody. Because it says, her presence so keenly that I'd known she was there, standing by the window or sitting by a fireplace reading a book. I had felt her there with me, walking the halls of the estate for years, and I had chastised myself for allowing... Okay, so in the bonus chapters, when Fisher is in the Foxy Boots address, that bonus chapter specifically, I had previously said... This is why I thought Onyx was Fisher's mom reincarnated, because when Fisher went to see the dresses and Saris walked in, he had to hide in the shadows and Onyx hid between his boots. What if Adina was there? What if Adina was there showing him the dresses and he like felt her but didn't know that she was there? And then Onyx wasn't standing next to Fisher when he was hiding. He was standing next to Adina because Adina and him were friends in the forge back in the day.
All right. Now that's a theory that makes a little more sense. Than Onyx being Kingfisher's mom.
Okay, now I have more information. All right? I didn't have this. I didn't have this paragraph. I didn't know.
It's okay. I can see that, though.
I want that. Can we make that into a short? I want that theory in a short.
Okay, I'll make that into a short for you.
That was a good one. I want that on the record.
Okay. I'll tag between pages and friends in it and be like, updated theory.
We were wrong, but here's her new thoughts. Yes, amazing. So, then we go into more Fisher father lore. So, it says, the gods had gifted my father with his shadows. Which, if you are a god, you have to be made by other gods? Was he Finrin at first and then became the Sticks of Shadows?
That's a good question. I definitely read over this.
Mm-hmm. The gods had gifted my father his shadows so that he might do good with them. My father had passed them down to me for the same purpose. Over the course of my life, I had used them to help protect many people. Would the gods punish me for such a flagrant misuse of power? Fuck it. Let them.
Okay, pause, okay. Too. Because of this line, right, of saying the gods gifted my father with his shadows, this throws you off the scent that Kingfisher's dad is Styx.
Yes.
Then this is still making you think it's Finrin. Man that is Finrin.
Right. I think Finrin was Finrin originally. I think Finrin was born with shadows. Some sort of weird magic. Finrin went to Zilvarin. Helped Carrion. All the things. Right? But then I think that Finrin, something happened. Maybe he went through the Quicksilver. Maybe the gods grabbed him. And I think that they thought that he could do different, thought that he could do good. Well, no. I guess I take that back because he gave his shadows to Kingfisher to do the same.
Mm-hmm.
And he went to the Quicksilver after Kingfisher was born.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think he was originally Finrin and somehow, some way along the way, he became Styx, God of Shadows.
I don't know, though. We need to know, like, the original lore of the gods. Did they all show up at once? Did, like, some show up first, and then over the years, the other ones showed up? Like, what do you mean? How did this happen?
The lore between, like, Bal and Mithin is they were originally one god, Bal Mithin, and then they were divided into two? So they can't
Yeah, they're, change, like, twins. Right? They're twins, but, like, were all the gods created at once?
Yeah.
Or was there a first god? And then somehow,
right,
each one came about. Yeah, like, how did they come about?
Yes, unanswered questions. I hate it.
Oh,
I love it.
You
what?
We have the same quote.
Oh, so we have a favorite quote. Our twin quote.
Yes.
Why don't you read it?
Okay. Since you read it the first time. Okay, that's okay. The thing about leaning is that it's very unstable. The ground could shift, and you could find yourself leaning in a completely different direction at any moment. I, myself, have experienced all kinds of leanings. Okay, Carrion.
You know what that reminds me of is the wacky inflatable tube man.
Oh my gosh. I don't think of that at all.
And now you do.
I'm thinking of him in Tal.
I mean, yes, but, like, now you're thinking of wacky, worky, inflatable tube man.
Maybe.
Leaning. Whee!
My goodness.
Amazing. And that covers this week's Brimstone episode. Thank you guys so much for joining us. If you liked this episode, please make sure to subscribe to our channel, rate our episode if possible, and share us with your friends so that way they can listen to Brimstone Deep Dives as well. We will see you next week on our final two episodes of our Brimstone coverage. We'll see you later.
Every dating app swipe is another loss. Gym bros, fake CEOs, straight up losers. So now the only app I open is Modo Casino, because at least there I'm surrounded by winners, real winners, thousands of them. While everyone else is in the single swamp, I'm at home relaxing while stacking bonuses, hitting wins, and playing all my favorite Vegas style games. Modo Casino, the only app worth your time.
Modo Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Modo.us for more details. Download the Modo Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Modo Casino, America's social casino.